Welcome to the Weekly Juice Podcast, where we discuss all things real estate,
personal finance,
investing,
entrepreneurship,
and the many ways to achieve financial independence. We interview accomplished investors and entrepreneurs
with the goal
that their stories inspire you
to take control of your financial future.
Here to get your creative juices flowing while also documenting their own personal investing journeys are your hosts, Corey Jacobson and Ryan Bevilacqua.
Welcome back to the Weekly Juice. As always, it's your boys, but it's just Corey. Ryan's not here, unfortunately. He had something come up, so it's Corey here for you. And we had a pretty cool guest on today. We had Amelia Joe. Well, she goes by Amelia Joe on Instagram. Amelia McGee, actually, is her name. She is an investor out of Iowa. First investor we've ever had out of Iowa that's been on the show. She's got 36 units. She's 30 years old. So, I mean, the people that we're having come on the show are just like surprising us every single day. 36 units, 30 years old. She's actually under contract for a 40 unit to double her portfolio, you know, be at 30 years old and have over 70 units. So what a cool story. She does basically all midterm rentals. And Des Moines, I'm learning about Des Moines, Iowa throughout the episode. It's a pretty, pretty cool place to invest. She called it like a mini Denver. So she really took advantage of the fact that she knew her neighborhood and her local area better than anybody else. She had a project management job that was, she's making $50,000. So it's nothing like to go crazy about, right? But she said she just used hustle, hard work, networking through Instagram. And she talked about exactly how she just, not just in the last couple of years, she took down an 11 unit with somebody that she met on Instagram. So we talk about networking, but like this whole thing is just comes full circle in this episode. And she breaks down exactly how she built her way through her portfolio. So I could talk for hours on it. We do talk for an hour on it, but let's bring Amelia in to share her story. That's an exciting one.
For real estate investors, going mobile is the next big thing for managing our properties. We like to have the power and resources in the palm of our hand. When we're hunting for deals, we're consistently go, go, go. Having Rent Ready's property management app is great for checking in on all our properties, especially when it's time to collect rent. With Rent Ready, we get the benefit of both mobile and web apps that allow us to collect rent from anywhere. We not only get instant notifications when rent is paid, but we also have the ability to send automatic reminders to tenants when rent is due or late. From finding the perfect tenant to collecting rent, everything an investor needs to build wealth and manage their investing portfolio can now be found under one roof with Rent Ready. The most exciting news is that Rent Ready gave us an exclusive 50% off promo code that can now be used by all of our Weekly Juice listeners. You just need to visit rentready.com and enter the code JUICEPOD to get 50% off any Rent Ready plan. That is rentready.com and enter the code JUICEPOD, JUICEPOD, to receive 50% off any Rent Ready plan. As you know, we talk a lot about financial independence, building revenue streams, and buying yourself more income. Wanted to give our listeners a special opportunity to potentially add a different revenue stream for themselves and into their portfolio. Tune into episode 110 to hear Corey and I peel back a couple layers on something that we're investing in currently at the moment. Just gives you a snapshot of where we are in our journey and gives you the opportunity to invest as well. This specific opportunity is to invest in a YouTube content monetization channel. And we go through every single step of the way, how we got involved, and all the ins and outs of it. If you're interested, after listening to the episode, feel free to drop us a DM. We're happy to answer any questions that you have, and we'll point you in the right direction.
All right, Amelia, welcome to the Weekly Juice Podcast. Thanks for taking the time tonight. We really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story with our guests.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Super excited to be here.
Absolutely. So let's see if you could maybe just dive into a little bit of your background, like where you, who you are, where you're from, and like how real estate investing became to be such a big part of your life.
Yeah. So my name is Amelia McGee. I'm based in Des Moines, Iowa. I'm 30 years old and I've been investing in real estate for about 2 years now. I started with my first buy and hold rental in October of 2020 and quickly accumulated 36 doors over the next 2 years and was able to leave my full-time job as a project manager. And now I do real estate full-time along with, I have a Women Invest in Real Estate community, and that is also a part-time gig for me. It's super fun. And my units are a mix of long-term, mid-term, and I have one short-term.
Awesome. So let's talk about how you got started. You mentioned you're a project manager. Was there something about that job that was not fulfilling for you? Did you have like an aha moment that you were like, I need to do something different? Because you're able to leave in a really quick time frame. So you must have had a lot of motivation behind that.
Yeah, absolutely. I always knew that I wanted to be self-employed and be a full-time entrepreneur. I just wasn't exactly sure with what. And once I realized that it could be real estate investing, I was just like all in, like spent every waking moment doing real estate investing. So yeah, that's how I started. I started actually with a flip and I made about 20,000, split that. We made 40, split that with a partner, and I took my 20,000 and put a down payment on a triplex with that.
So what gave you the motivation to get started in terms of like, did somebody that you know, were they doing it? Like, how did you get the interest and like, why, I guess, real estate? Because there's a lot of ways to build wealth and potentially get into financial freedom, but real estate, it sounds like that really stuck out to you. Was there something specific, family member, mentor? How did that come to be?
Not honestly, HGTV. I loved like the flipping shows and I originally wanted to be a flipper. That's why I started with a flip. And just thought, hey, if I could add like $20,000 to $40,000 a year on top of my full-time salary, like that's a pretty good side gig. And very, very quickly realized how time intensive flipping was and wanted a more passive route. And so at some point during that year of flipping a house, I stumbled across Bigger Pockets. I honestly don't remember how. I started following a couple investors on Instagram. Investor Girl Brit specifically, I remember being the first woman that I started following, first investor ever, and was like, hey, I love what she's doing, but didn't wait too long to actually take action on that information. I was pretty much like, okay, like this is going to be it. So I need to get started right away.
Cool. So, and you're located in Iowa, correct? Is that where you live and then also where you invest, or just where, or do you invest out of state?
Yeah, I live and invest in Iowa. It's very low cost of living, very cheap to buy properties here, specifically in the areas that I'm purchasing, which I think is another element to my story. Why I was able to grow so rapidly is because my first triplex that I ever purchased was $78,000. So, I mean, and it cash flows around $800 a month. So it was like a really good deal, but didn't cost me that much money to get into.
Makes sense. Yeah. So like, talk to me about what it's like to invest in Iowa. I think you're probably the first, maybe you get on a bunch of podcasts and you may be the first person that invests in Iowa that they've talked to as well too. And no disrespect to Iowa, because that sounds like I've heard amazing things about it. I just don't know a lot of people from Iowa. So give me the pros and cons that you kind of went through it a little bit, but what's the reason that you like there? And you're kind of a testament to people that say, well, I can't invest in my own backyard. But I think there's a way to invest in every single backyard. If you want to, you can also do long-term, unless you're maybe in like Midtown Manhattan or like downtown San Francisco. But other than that, I recommend people getting started investing in their backyard because I think they know it better. Was that, you know, your competitive advantage in that market?
Yeah, there's a couple things there. One, I started investing in my hometown. So I had a huge competitive advantage there. The town, it, however, is only 5,000 people. So it's a very rural community, which I think scares a lot of people away. And I wouldn't necessarily say to an out-of-state investor, go get started in a rural community, because you have to have already built connections there. People aren't like, if you don't know a repairman or you don't know an HVAC or a plumber in a small town, it's going to be really hard to find them. But for me, I knew all those people already. So that was an amazing opportunity for me. The second is in Des Moines, which is the capital of Iowa, where I actually live. I also invest there. I love Des Moines because it's like a hidden gem. I call it like a mini Denver. It's super cool, really progressive. Lots of cool breweries here. It's great. And I love that it has that appreciation, which other parts of Iowa don't have. But it also still has decent cash flow. So I would say, to describe Iowa as a state where you might invest, it's going to have high cash flow and probably lower appreciation unless you're in a bigger city like Des Moines.
Got it. And then I imagine Des Moines is the area where you're doing a lot of your midterm rentals, right? I mean, you invest there totally, or it sounds like most of your portfolio is there, but talk to me about the midterm rental like scene there and why you feel like that was the best route for you to go with your portfolio?
Yeah, midterm rentals are by far my favorite strategy. I have 8 units in the Des Moines area that I've converted to midterm rentals. There are, I think, 5 large regional hospital chains, like, I don't know if chain's the right word, but they're owned by different companies in Des Moines. And so there's a large influx of traveling nurses in that area. So it's great for that. But I've also housed quite a few construction workers, wind turbine technicians, solar panel technicians. Like, there's a large need for those workers in Des Moines because it is growing rapidly. And I think it will be for many years to come. So that also gives me some stability with my midterm rentals. I do, however, have some midterm rentals in my rural community, though, as well, which I think people don't realize can be successful. But it's really hard to find staffing at smaller hospitals. Like, there's not a lot of RNs in this community, so they are having to hire travelers to come in, and they need a place to live. So I've been able to fulfill that need there.
Got it. Yeah. Midterm is something that's come on so strong in the past like year or so. I'm curious how you would describe the difference in your management strategies between maybe a long-term and a midterm. And then also on top of that, what do you think the revenue difference is? Like, if you can rent out a place long-term for, let's just say, you know, I imagine, let's just call it $2,000 a month. Are you able to get $3,000 or $4,000 a month? Like, is it that much higher to do midterm? Just talk to me about, like, one, the management aspect of it, how that differs, mm-hmm. and then maybe the profit breakdown, how much higher you're able to get.
This is actually one of the reasons why midterm rentals are my favorite, is because the management is really not that different from a long-term tenant. Once you have them onboarded and in the unit, I pretty much never hear from them, similar to a long-term tenant. The onboarding process is a little bit more cumbersome, only because you're having a turnover about every 3 months or so. But once you have your systems in place, like, I have a cleaner that I've hired out, I have automated messages set up through Hospitable that they send all the check-in process to the nurses. So that's very hands-off. I mean, it's pretty much just the extra turnovers that you have that make it a little bit more time-consuming than a long-term. As far as revenue, so I have an 11-unit apartment that I've converted 6 of the units into midterm rentals. Long-term rent for those units would be about $700, but I charge $1,300 for my midterm, and it costs me between $2,000 and $3,000 to furnish. So I'm very quickly making the furnishing costs back and then cash flowing, what, $600 more per month, which is huge. It's almost double. I mean, that number seems fairly small because it's a studio, but percentage-wise, it's, you know, 2x.
Absolutely. Term. Yeah. That's what I was going to ask. So, like, my numbers were kind of in line there, just at a different scale. Like, to be able to 2x your investment and have, yeah, you have more turnover, but you also have less. My guess would be higher quality tenants, people that are traveling for, especially the like nurses that are coming in. And then also with the turnover being quick, there's not that much time for people to break stuff. Like, they could, you know, anybody can break something, but I feel like that, do you see that as the maintenance is around the same level as a long-term?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've never had anyone break anything. And quite frankly, they usually leave things that can be used. Like, I've had them leave vacuums, storage bins, different things like that, honestly. But yeah, I mean, there's an extra risk there that your furniture could get you ruined, but I don't furnish my units with like luxury furniture that it's going to really cost me an arm and a leg to replace. And I also still get deposits on those units. So, you know, if something does get ruined, I have a little bit of a safety net there. But like I said, I haven't had any issue. They're super high quality of tenants, another reason why I love midterm rentals. So yeah, it's honestly, it's like the best, and it's a win-win-win all the way around.
Cool. And maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves. We'll talk about like how you built the portfolio coming up here soon. But since we've been talking about the management, do you manage the portfolio yourself, or do you have property management that does that for you and with you, or do you have virtual assistants? Like, what's your strategy for trying to take the least amount of your own time as possible to manage it?
Yeah. So I do self-manage all 36 units, long-term, midterm, and the short-term. But it's my full-time job. Real estate is my full-time job. So it's not like I'm, you know, doing this on top of a really demanding W-2. I would say that I maybe spend 5 hours a week across all 36 units doing management. One way that I cut down on the time that it takes is if I have a handyman that needs to get into a unit to make some sort of a repair, I connect him directly with the tenant and have them schedule it between the two of them through a three-way group text between me, the tenant, and the handyman. So I'm still in the loop, but that completely eliminates me as the middle person, which I'm a huge fan of. It's just so cumbersome to try and coordinate schedules between two different people when you're like the third man out. So that honestly has been the biggest help, I think. Everything else is pretty much systematized. I onboard people the same exact way every single time, collect rent the same exact way. So it's not that much work. I'm a huge proponent of self-managing if you have the extra time to do so.
Yeah. So we get a lot of mixed reviews on whether or not or hire a property manager. For the way that Ryan and I function, hiring a property manager was the best decision we ever made. And we've said it on a lot of our podcasts because we both work full-time jobs. And The patience level that I personally have with tenants has created a relationship that I'm not fond of with them. And I'd rather be the outside that the overseeing our management company than trying to deal with scheduling a maintenance issue that the tenant says they're going to be home and then they're not home for. It's just like too much for me personally, I can applaud it, and you're saving significant dollars. And if you have your systems built out, it makes a lot of sense. I'm wondering if you could potentially go into the how-to of building this portfolio. You know, it's funny, you kind of, and everyone who comes on the show does this, like, you know, I have 30 units, 40 units, 50 units, whatever. And then like people listening are like, how the hell did somebody do this so quickly? Like what's the way they did it? Was it A, you literally saving up money each time you were able to bring money in from your W-2 job, save up the cash flows, roll them into more deals? Or do you have a lot of partners? Like what's the strategy for you to grow your portfolio to 36 in such a short period of time?
It's a huge mixture between all of those. I will tell you, I was making a very modest salary of $50,000 at my full-time job. So I didn't have those golden handcuffs that it took to quit my job. So that hopefully makes me a little more relatable. I didn't have a super high paying job, but I am very financially savvy and I had a strict budget. I think I probably lived on 50% of my salary and saved the rest. And I just used that money to basically fund my real estate investments. Like I said, I bought my first triplex for $78,000. And I used the money that I made from a flip to buy that property. It was kind of an inadvertent burr, because it wasn't going to close in time. So I just said, I'll just pay for it all cash. I'll borrow a little bit of money from someone to be able to close all cash. And then I'll just refinance out of it, which worked really well because I was able to fix up some of the units before I got the bank loan. And it appraised for 92. So I pulled out I pulled out most of my equity, and then I put a down payment on a quadplex that I bought for 135. So I had 7 units within 3 months because I utilized the BRRRR strategy, and I had a decent amount of savings just from being frugal and financially, you know, savvy already.
Yeah, totally. And you're right. You made this entirely more relatable. There's a lot of people that are listening that are looking to get into real estate. They make something like what you said, $50,000. And you know, not to mitigate that, that's around the national average for what people are making, right? So, But to do that, people think that they can't get into real estate. And it is hard to live off 50 grand. I would admit that, depending upon where you live. I'm in the Philadelphia area. So like—
Yeah, Iowa, it's fine.
Right. Exactly. So here's the difficult situation is that you may have to, if you're making that money, you have to probably find a place to live that you're able to sustain that living. And with remote work, it's more possible. But then what are some strategies that you use to save up money? I mean, even in Iowa, like I said, I feel like that's accomplishing a lot to be able to save up a significant amount. Like, were you just like, look, I got to be this way for a couple years, and knowing that on the back end, you're going to reap the reward and the benefit of doing that?
Yeah. So even before I was investing in real estate, I knew that like I wanted to be, I call myself a Dave Ramsey dropout. Like I wanted to be debt free. So like I bought a car when I was 23 and had it paid off when I was 25. So I didn't have a car loan that was eating up a chunk of my salary. I paid my student loans off within 5 years. So I was able to really accelerate my savings because I didn't have a $500 student loan payment. And then I also, my boyfriend and I live together. So we split the living expenses, which obviously cuts down on how much I'm spending every month. And we, you know, I don't have any kids. I don't have any pets. So like, it's really just me. I track my spending every single month. So I know exactly how much is going out and how much is coming in. And then I also had a part-time job bartending. So I used that money and I just, that was basically either my fun money or I just saved it every single month. So yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily easy, but it's like, it's so doable if you really want it. Like you have to want it though.
Yeah, I think that's the key for a lot of people is that unfortunately, a number of people will make excuses for why it's not possible. And then the more people that I interview, I find that they've come from situations that are harder than the one that I've come from and been able to build it. So if I can do it and then 135 people that we've interviewed can do it, all coming from a variety of backgrounds and places and living situations. So it's inspiring. And there's kind of a stigma or a negative tone with side hustles right now, like the hustle culture even. But I think that part of it's like, it's so necessary to get ahead, right? Mm-hmm. If that's the life you want to live, if it's not, if happiness is the ultimate goal, which I believe it is. But for me, I think wealth translates to happiness in the sense that you're not desperate and you don't have to make desperate decisions with your life. So that is really cool. And I think that's really a relatable scenario for a lot of people that are listening.
Yeah, I think hustle culture becomes toxic in someone's life when it's a never-ending cycle. Like if it's a means to an end, if it's a 2, 3, even 5 year means to an end, I'm all for it. But if it becomes this thing where you just like you're addicted to the hustle, then it's like, well, why do you even want to be financially independent? Or why do you even want to make passive income if you're never taking a rest? Like for me, I want to be able to like go live on a beach and literally have no responsibilities in 2 years, like which I'm almost to that point other than I manage my portfolio right now. But eventually I'll hire it out and not have to do shit every single day. So,
yeah, that is the goal. And I think that I may be bursting your bubble here, but I have a feeling that you may not get to the point where you won't do anything because the amount of work and effort that it takes to get to where you are. The good news is you'll probably have to work a ton less, but I don't know. I mean, you correct me if I'm wrong, but the personality that it takes, I think I have it and Ryan has it too, where I'm like, I can't wait to quote unquote retire. I just don't think I will because it'll be the next project that inspires me because of the kind of brains that we have and likely you have to be able to build 36 units in a short period of time. You think you'll be able to push the off button? I'm curious to hear what you have to say on that.
Good point. No, my mom likes to tell me I have a dreamer mind, like I'm always scheming something. And I think it's that it's my like I'm choosing. Kind of too, it's right? My choice. Yeah, I'm choosing to do those things. Like that is so much more enjoyable for me. And that was my reason for wanting to be a full-time entrepreneur. First of all, I'm terrible with structure and like having a boss. But secondly, like I wanted to have that freedom to do what I choose to do.
Love it. So let's get back to your portfolio a little bit. You mentioned you to the point where you got to the 7 units and that you're using your own money, recycling it in the burst strategy. So a lot of people get to that point, that 7 to 10 units, and they're stuck because they run out of money, right? And it's happened to us too. The scaling from 7 to 36, was that when you started to go out and borrow other people's money, partner, now that you knew what you were doing?
Yep. Yes, it absolutely was. And some people that I've talked to think it's a failure to run out of your own money, but it's just the, like, that's just the facts. Like you're eventually going to run out of your own money. So it's not a failure. It's just a pivoting point. So that's when I brought on partners. My very first partners were my parents. they're not overly wealthy. So that's another thing. They worked their W-2 jobs for 40 years. They retired with a 401k. I mean, they're smart people, so they had a decent nest egg, but they're not uber rich. Like, it, so very relatable. But they saw how successful I was starting to become with rentals, and they thought, hey, we're getting ready to retire. We want to make some extra money to cover our insurance premiums until we reach 65, because my mom's 62. So they've got 3 years. They're like, why don't we buy a couple rental properties with Amelia, and that'll cover our insurance expenses? And so I bought units 8 through 15 with them. They had access to a line of credit at a bank, and they my mom like collateralized her 401k essentially to be able to borrow that line of credit. If we default on the loan, they'll take her 401k. So we used that money to buy a couple properties, and then we did another BRRRR on another triplex. And so we've been able to reutilize that money a couple times. So that's units through 15. And then from there, I partnered with a couple that I met on Instagram to purchase an 11 unit apartment building. So that's been my biggest purchase so far. And that got me to 26 units. And that was at the point when I quit my job. So the numbers on that were, we purchased it for $500,000, and they came with 100% of the down payment, which was around $100,000. And they're from Idaho/California. So they can't buy anything in their area for that. And they're like, hey, you're boots on the ground. We've been following you for a while. We know, we feel like we know you. So they felt very comfortable giving me that money to invest.
Great. So that's an awesome segue to talk about this deal. So $500,000, they brought the down payment. Did you need on a property at 25% on a property like that? So they were able to bring over 150 or so?
They only 20%.
20%. Cool. Yep. So how did that deal, and this is a selfish question and also some for our audience, because, you know, there's so, the best part about real estate is it's so easily creatively structured. Like, you can do whatever you want with what you're agreeing with. And then the other people that are in the deal are agreeing with. So did you structure that? Like, if you found the deal and they brought the down payment, did you 50-50 split it? Is that the equity that you came up with in terms of like who, the value that each of you brought to it?
Yeah. So it's actually 60-40. It's 60% them, 40% me. However, if I were, I wanted it to be 50-50, but when they suggested 60-40, I was like, absolutely, yes, let's do it. Because I was like, oh my God, 40% of this is better than 0% of nothing. Like, I was like, this is amazing. Like, absolutely. So, however, one thing I would do differently going forward, and I think this is like a pro tip here, is I would, so I'm getting paid 40% every month to basically manage, but I would write in on top of that, like some sort of a management fee, even if it's only 5%, I would write that I also get paid as the property manager, because I'm saving our business money by self-managing. I could hire it out and we'd pay somebody else 10%, and then we'd still split profit 60-40 at this point. So yeah.
Right, but that would be 60-40 of, you know, 90% of the deal, right? As opposed to 100% of it, right?
Right.
Okay.
But we are going to BRRRR that, and we're going to refinance. And when we refinance, they'll be able to pull all their capital back out, at which point we'll restructure our agreement to be 50-50.
Got it. Okay, cool. So a property like that, that you own 40% of, you own 40% of the, I guess that it works as you own 40% of the equity, the debt, and then the cash flow, right? Like all of this, yep, is 40%. So what on an 11 unit property, you said 11 units, correct?
Yep.
What does that cash flow in totality? I'm genuinely curious. And then what do you think it will after the refi and the BRRRR, putting all the work into it?
Yeah. So we purchased it for 500. When we bought it, it was all long-term tenants. And I think I looked the other day, it was bringing in around 5,000 a month, maybe a little more, because they had high vacancies. Like they had a property manager managing it and it was undermanaged, et cetera, et cetera. Now we're bringing in around 12,000 a month, and it's, wow, cash flowing probably 3 to 4, depending on if there's a turnover or whatever. After the refinance, we're not looking to like pull out every single penny. We're just looking to pull out enough to pay them off what they put into it. We'll probably cash flow around 2 to 3.
So, okay, so
still good, and no money in the deal.
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole point, is like your return on investment is infinity. So that's the best part of the whole thing. You have, call it, even if it's 3,000 on the low end, you know, you're making $1,200 a month or so on that to manage it, but you already have your management systems down. For the people that are in the deal with you that brought the capital, it's a complete win-win if they're able to pull their money out in X amount of time. They own more of the deal than you do because they brought the money. I love the structure because you can make it 50-50, you can make it 70-30, and everybody in the deal or in any deal wants something different. They're probably in a different stage in their lives than you are, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, they're absolutely. They're a little bit older than me. They have two little kids. They've got a construction business. They're super busy. They literally just wanted me to be able to write them a check every single month and pay them their portion, which worked out great. I was ready to do the hustling and be the boots on the ground, because to me, like, to own an 11 unit apartment, that's totally worth it.
What's the way that you found the deal? Like, how did you come across the deal and bring it to them? And I know you said you met on Instagram, but some people wouldn't know what to do with an 11 unit if they found it. And even if they did, you were able to network through Instagram. So, like, talk to me about the process of knowing that it was a good deal for you.
Well, first of all, I was scared shitless. I hope I can cuss on this podcast, because
you cuss, and I'm like that every day. So I think it's, yeah, you just kind of just scared and do it anyway. That's what we always,
yeah,
say.
So because it was huge. Like, to me, I had been investing for not quite a year at that point, like 10 months. And so it was scary to me to bring that deal to an investor, but basically I found it was on the MLS. It had been on the MLS for probably 30 to 45 days. And I love the location. It looks down on the Des Moines skyline, which is super cool. And the Des Moines downtown is expanding south towards where that apartment unit is. So I love the location. I had in the back of my mind that we would be able to convert a couple of the units to midterm rentals, thus increasing the cash flow. And so, yeah, that's how I found it. I think other investors maybe weren't really looking at it. One, because I think it was a little bit too big for like a brand new investor. And two, it was too small for like the big guys. They don't care about an 11 unit. So it was kind of just the middle people that were like really going to be.
Which is a small amount of people. Right?
It really is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, if you think about it, it really is. So once I found it, I toured it and I was like, oh my God, I have to get this. I have literally no money though. So I'm going to post about it on Instagram and see if anyone is interested in partnering with me. Now I know there's like rules about fundraising and things like that. So I have no idea if what I did was legal or not, but I'm the type of person that's like, ask for forgiveness later or whatever that saying is. And I'm like, really, they're not concerned about somebody looking for $100,000 anyways. So I posted it on Instagram. I had a couple people message me. I sent an email to all the people with the details, how much their cash on cash return would be, you know, what I was looking for specifically, and then ended up with the partners that I have. It's been like the best partnership ever. We're looking to do more deals together, actually, but yeah, that's how I found it. Scared shitless, did it anyways, worked out really well, converted 6 of the units myself with a handyman into medium-term, midterm rentals. So that's where we're at.
So did you know immediately based on how did you qualify, I guess would be my question, knowing the location and the price? Did you just, you know, some people have like, you know, the quadratic formula and stuff that they go through, and I'm being facetious, but like this entire chart of what makes a good deal. Did you just say, I know the area is good, I know the price is good, I'll figure out the cash flow later? Or was there a specific formula that drove you to say this deal is going to be like awesome?
Pretty much what you said.
Yeah.
Because like I'm a doer. Like I just like failure isn't an option. Everything's figure outable. I think there's a book on that. But I knew like I'm good at running the numbers. So I knew that it cash flowed even at like keeping it all long term. It cash flowed it a little bit, like enough to make it a decent deal. But I knew it's 2 minutes from downtown where there's 5 major hospitals. I knew that we would be able to convert at least 1 or 2 of the units to midterm. Thus, we increased our cash flow $1,200 with just two midterm units. So,
yeah. Well, the cool thing about investing in an area like you are is that, first of all, $500,000 for 11 units is like crazy for what I'm hearing. But also the rent doesn't go down that significantly. Like a property here that's that in an up and coming area in Philadelphia would probably be like 1.3 or 1.4 million. But the thing is that for a one bedroom, if they're one bedrooms, like you're not going to get lower than $500 or $600 a month, like almost anywhere. And the point being is that even if they're $500 or $600 a month, you're talking about over the 1% rule. So that kind of rule of thumb may apply. I don't know if they're one bedrooms or if you said that, but like that to me is an indicator. Okay, I can make this deal work. And then especially by being able to increase the revenue by, you said, around that 50% number, then you know if it's a 2% deal, 2%, and again, for people that are listening, like the how you get to that number being $500,000, 11 units at $500 a month, that's over 1%. The rent yearly is 1% of the purchase price or over that. So was that the case where they won beds and like around that number? Did you?
Yeah,
you might have already said that, by the way.
They were studios. They're all studios, except for one. 10 studios, one bedroom. But yeah, I basically used like the 1% rule to just like back of the like napkin it out. And then I was looked into it further. And that's what I do with most deals because I'm not wasting time like analyzing stuff that doesn't even hit the 1%. But like I said at the beginning, I think I mentioned now we're bringing in around 12,000 a month. So if you're going by percent rules, it's over the 2% rule, which in this market is very hard to find. So yeah, it's my favorite deal ever so far.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm sure you have plenty more to go. So what's next then for you for, you know, your business? You have 36 units. You mentioned you want to be on a beach in T-minus 2 years. So how do you make that happen? Like, what's your strategy for the next couple of years for you?
I'm actually under contract on a 40 unit motel that just happened this week. And so it's going to be a midterm rental complex. Basically, it already is with construction workers, but I'd like to make it a little nicer and have nurses. The best part of the deal is the seller is carrying $1 million of the financing. So we don't have to bring any money to the table because that's over 20% that the bank's going to require for a down payment. It's going to cash flow around $10,000 to $13,000 a month. So it's a great deal. Purchase price is 1.7. So
awesome.
More to come there. That's like also scared shitless because that's literally double what my portfolio is now, but I'm super excited about it.
That's awesome. And it's amazing. It's happened similar to us. We're LPs in a few deals, which put us over, you know, 60 units, but or 50 or 60 units, but we're LPs in a 50 unit and we have like 8 ourselves. So I don't tell people that we own that much. But I think my point in saying that is real estate investing actually becomes so much easier once you're at that 8 to 10 unit mark. At least it did for us, because then you're in a sphere of networks where there's so many people that are ahead of you and they can kind of bring you to their level. And then you can actually talk shop with them. And they're like, oh, you're actually doing this, right? You're not just saying that you're doing it. And that, I feel like the number of units that changed for us was like around that 8 unit mark. Was it similar for you? Because you're about to double your portfolio. Like, and you probably didn't guess that you would be at that a couple of years ago, right?
No. Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. Definitely. Once you get to that 10 unit mark, I think that people take you more seriously. And people actually came to me and wanted to partner with me on this deal to be the boots on the ground. And they have background, they own campgrounds and storage units, but they don't want to do any work. And they're like, hey, you manage the manager, you manage all this, and we'll give you 20% of the gross monthly revenue, which is 35,000. So I'm like, well, that's over 6,000 a month for me. I'm like, sure, I'll do it. Twist my arm. Like,
yeah, right. I'm sure wasn't much twisting there. So that's great. As we wind down the show a little bit, I kind of want to talk to you about your feelings of short-term and medium-term rentals. I'm seeing not as much for medium-term. That's why I think you're in a good spot, but I'm seeing the regulations come out in the dozens, right? For short-term rentals across the country, depending upon the markets that you're in. What do you think is the future of short-term and medium-term rentals? And do you think it's oversaturated to get into short-term rentals? Or do you feel like it's totally market-dependent? Just give me your thoughts there.
Yeah. So short-term rentals, I think personally, I would be a little bit leery about investing in right now, especially if it's in a highly competitive tourist area. I think the market is becoming oversaturated. Personally, I own one short-term rental that's within 2 hours driving distance of me, and it's in a lake town. It attracts local Iowans. So I don't feel like markets that are local, like getting local bookings, are in jeopardy. I think it's the fly to destinations that are going to be in trouble, especially if we do enter more of a recession than what we're in now. But those local places, I would still buy there. I also like it mine because we can use it, which is a huge advantage. That's why part of why we bought it. But as far as midterm rentals go, I don't really see that market slowing down too much. I've stayed completely booked since I started over a year ago with the midterm rental strategy. And I think people are becoming more mobile too. So working remotely, I think, is a big audience. People moving that need an interim place to stay. I think there's all sorts of different, it's not just traveling nurses. There's other people that are looking for midterm rentals. So that doesn't really worry me as much.
No, I totally agree. I think that that's the trend because everyone's able to work remote and people want to go visit other places for X amount of time. And there's so much work being done on these phones that we have in our pockets from TikTok and Instagram, and people are making full-time salaries. They're able to work from anywhere. So I love midterm. I think you're correct on the short term because we have our short-term rentals in like a vacation town that's a local vacation town. People from PA, New Jersey, New York are the ones that are going and visiting that. I'm not knocking Joshua Tree or Sedona or something like that. I just think that the high end, the people that own the mansions are going to have issues because in any recession, the top is the one that gets hurt the most. Now, the contrary to that is that they can probably afford to be hurt the most if they have a bunch of those assets. They're probably leveraged well enough, I would think, to, if they can get them in the first place, to probably withstand it, but maybe not. So I love the short term still, but it's got to be a market that's like 3-4 hour drivable type thing. And that's so I agree with you. I think that's awesome. So let's talk about your community here. You have a women's community, and the it's called Women Invest in Real Estate, right? It's very simple, mm-hmm. right? Women Invest in Real Estate. So
what don't overthink it.
I was looking at, I'm like, okay, this is right. Women Invest in Real Estate. So what is now I can kind of get the gist of it just by the name, but what is the goal of the community? And are you like, found this group? I don't know if that was the right plural tense, but is it your group? Are you a member of it? Just talk to us about it.
Yeah. So it's Women Invest in Real Estate, WIRE for short, which I'll just refer to it as because it's, you know, for short. But it started as a passion project between my friend Grace and I. I actually met Grace when she slid into my DMs on Instagram. We're both from Iowa, live 2 hours apart from each other. But she's like, oh my God, I've never met another investor from Iowa, let alone a girl. Like, let's become BFFs. And so unbeknownst to me, yeah, we absolutely did. She wanted to pick my brain, but so she was too embarrassed to ask though. So she created this meetup where she posted it on Instagram and is like, hey, let's do this virtual meetup. Amelia's going to be our guest speaker. Just come and ask her questions about real estate. And I think like 40 people showed up. It was crazy. Like, that was a lot to me at the time. And then she told me after, like, I just wanted to ask you a bunch of questions. So I framed it as a meetup, which is hilarious. But then we were like, hey, she's like, do you want to do this monthly? Like, we'll co-host and we'll just do it monthly. So every month we brought on a different speaker to talk about different real estate investing topics. And it was a free event that people could come to. And then we started hosting retreats. So we hosted 3 retreats this year of about 20 women each across the US. They're amazing. We love talking about business, money, goals. And we feel like in real life, our friends aren't necessarily interested in that. So it's awesome to be around women for an entire weekend who just want to talk about those things. We also have courses. We sell a course on midterm rentals. So if you're interested in midterm rentals, our website's womeninvestinrealestate.com, and you can check that out. But yeah, it was a passion project. Now we host monthly meetups about different topics still. And yeah, it's just kind of grown. It's been really fun.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's great. And the meetups and the communities are really what make people skyrocket to the next level. It doesn't matter your skin color, doesn't matter your sex. The game gets a lot more fun when you have a lot of people around you that are doing it and doing it well. And I just think that's the best part. It's why we do the podcast. So awesome to hear. Good luck with it, because it's I'm sure it's helped you immensely. Just the amount of, just the people that you come in contact with. It's a connection game, and just so I hope it's really
it is.
Yeah.
They're genuine friends now. I mean, I have 60 new friends from across the US, 20 from each meetup that I got to spend a whole weekend with just talking shop. So they're authentic connections, which I really enjoy.
It's the best part. So we made it to the core four, and we're going to ask you the same four questions just to get to know you a little bit more. The first question is your favorite investing or real estate book, maybe that's helped you kind of take your game to the next level in the past couple of years.
Yeah, I would say the best book that I could recommend is, honestly, it's so cliche, but Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I think was like one of the first books that I ever read. It's not real estate specific, but it shifted my mindset from being a Dave Ramsey like follower / dropout to starting to think about how I could make my money work for me instead of just saving. So that definitely, if you haven't read it, I think it should go on your to read list.
Yeah, I'm not going to scream at people right now because I don't think that would make for a good podcast. But if you're on episode 135 of our show and you haven't listened or read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you need to do it. And so many people have mentioned the book, but it's really beyond that. It's a mindset shift. And the word mindset gets thrown around a lot. But just if you read it, you'll understand why. It's really what has made people wealthy and the vision behind wealth, especially in America, where it's more possible than almost anywhere. So I love the book, and it is cliche, but we don't care because it's such a good book.
People are sitting there. They're probably like, please don't say it. Please don't say it. Please. And I'm like, right? Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah. It never fails. So, good book. The second question is, let's say I gave you $50,000, just tax-free money. Like, you know, at the stage that you're in your journey, it may not be a lot. It may be, but maybe gear it towards somebody who's in the starting out first couple, 4, 5, 6, 7 units, whatever it is. What would you be your recommendation with $50,000 today, knowing what's going on in 2022 going into 2023?
These are really good questions. I mean, that's really good question. Okay. So a couple things. If you've never bought a property, really quickly, house hack. I'd use that money to house hack. That's something I never did, but if I could go back, I would definitely house hack right out of college. So I'd use that money for a down payment. The second thing I would recommend is going into the times that we are going into, if you don't already have a bulked up savings account for your properties, like you said, if you have like 4 to 6 properties and you don't, I set aside like 10,000 a property until I reach a certain point. And then I'm like, why am I still saving? I'll just like shift some money around. But if you don't have a bulked up savings for emergencies, for when your HVAC goes out in the middle of winter, I would beef that up. But then after that, honestly, people are like, are you still buying right now with interest rates at 7%? First of all, in Iowa, they're at 5.5. So that's another reason why Iowa's the best, but I would still be buying and still be looking for those deals. Yeah, I mean, just always be buying. That's my motto. Yeah. So
no, I agree. I'm the same way. And I think that if you can make the numbers work, which I realize that they're harder to do, but if you can, you got to realize how many less people are looking. Okay. And it's the whole adage that, you know, would be fearful when others are greedy, be greedy when others are fearful. But we bought a property, we closed in September. And let me tell you the difference between the amount of people that were looking in April, May, June, like you know, that was when you couldn't get a deal, right? And now deals are sitting. So I still think it's a great time to buy. It's harder to make the numbers work, but there's less people looking and sellers are like, okay, I got to move this thing, I got to do it. So you're able to negotiate more. So I think That's what we would do with it. That's what we are doing with the money. So great answer.
And learn about creative financing. Put that tool in your toolbox. I would say that it's not right for every deal. And I kind of get annoyed by people who are like, hey, how can I make this deal a seller finance or creative finance? It's like, well, some sellers just aren't open to that idea. Like, it's not going to always work, but there aren't as many buyers out there. So sellers are going to be more open to creative offers.
Yep, totally. So question three is, what's been your biggest mistake in your investing journey and how have you learned from it? Or maybe you didn't learn, or just tell us what happened there with your biggest mistake.
Not hiring out a CPA / bookkeeper sooner. That is, and I still haven't really.
But you know, it's a mistake is what you're saying.
Yeah. Oh, big mistake. Big mistake. Okay. Because I hate it. And it's the last thing on my priority list when it probably should be towards the top. But in 2023, once the new season starts, I'm going to shift all my bookkeeping over to a real estate specific bookkeeper in the Des Moines area. So definitely learn from that. I wouldn't say that I maybe lost a little bit of money from it, but like, luckily it hasn't been a catastrophic mistake. But I would say, even if you have one property, hire that shit out right away. Like, just do it, because it will allow you to grow at a more rapid pace to hire out menial tasks like that.
Yeah. And if you're looking for a CPA, let us know offline. At the stage that you're at in your portfolio, you can probably afford one of the ones that we're using. You definitely can afford the one of the ones that you're using. And I got sticker shock at like the cost of the CPA, but they're like, look, you're going to save way more than this. It's going to be so much more worth it because you could do tax planning, not just file for you, right? There's a whole planning that goes up throughout the year. You talk once a month. And for us, I didn't realize how much it costs to hire a really good CPA, but we're finding out that it's so, so worth it. And a lot of the investors that are bigger investors are saying, to the tax savings is actually the best part of real estate. And I never understood that. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, what about the cash flow? What about the appreciation? And then as you get deeper into the game, you realize that the savings on the tax can like make or break your portfolio. And if you don't have the right person doing it, for us, it wasn't ourselves. So that's for sure. So yeah, if you're looking, if you're in the market, let us know. But I would highly recommend hiring out a CPA, especially if even one unit's fine, but like you can do one at your unit yourself. If you get up there in units, I think it's a no-brainer. So, question four, what do you want your legacy to be, Amelia? Like, what's the, and maybe you don't have this big legacy that you're trying to leave, but like, why do you get up and do what you do every day? Like, what's your why behind trying to create a life for yourself that's financially independent?
Ooh, I have not really thought too deep into that. However, my why is definitely, like I said, to have very passive income and be able to do what I want when I want. My goal would eventually be to have a family and kids. And so I would love to have myself set up to be completely like work optional, spend as much time with my kids as possible. Really travel with my family. Like, I would love to do the RV thing across it. Like, I don't know that I don't really have my legacy planned out because I'm only 30 and like, hopefully I've lived for many, many more years, but my end goal would be able to be to do whatever I want with my family.
Awesome. Yeah. And for us, it was just a cool question for people to think about, because I think about it all too often. Like, you know, to be able to build a portfolio, it takes a lot of work, but like, in the end, for us, there's got to be an overarching reason, or it's just, you know, work just to work. And it doesn't sound like you're that type of person. So like, we love the question because we get great answers just wanting to help people. And the fact that you're in a position at 30 where you are, it's showing other people that they can do it, and you're helping people whether you even realize it or not. So very, very cool. We've made it to the last drop. And the last drop is, let's say you were going, you just mentioned you were 30. Let's say you go back to your 18-year-old self and you had a chance to just look, you know, Amelia, 18-year-old Amelia in the mirror. What advice would you give her and why?
Oh.
Sounds like you didn't need a lot of advice because you just got off to a roaring start. But if you had one thing?
drink a lot less Four Locos in college.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, if there were the Four Locos that I'm 31. Oh, so those things were like, yeah, we know. No, people don't really know about those ones.
I don't know
how they were legal, but yeah.
We drank the lethal Four Locos. No, quite frankly, it would be, if I could go back and tell them, it would be the house hack right out of college. I was always like financially savvy in college, so I wasn't like bad with money. So I don't need to go back and tell myself like, hey, don't do this or that. But it would be to start investing right when you get that first W-2 full-time job, buy a quadplex. That would have been my advice. Don't even start with a duplex, start with a quadplex and just go all in. And a year later, buy another quadplex and just keep doing it. If I had done that, I mean, what? I'm 30 now at 23, seven. If I bought one a year, I'd be at what? 28 units alone just from house hacking. Like that would be what I would say.
Cool. Awesome. Well, Amelia, thanks so much for sharing your story with us. We really appreciate your taking your time. If people feel like they resonated with your story, they want to learn about more about you, your course, your community, network, maybe get into deals together, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Yeah, I'm most active on Instagram. Don't even try to get me on Facebook because I'm not there. My Instagram is Amelia Joe, R-E-I. Joe is just J-O, the female version. There's no E on the end.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, Amelia. I think your story is amazing. And I now know an investor in Iowa, which is very cool. So I didn't before. So thanks so much for coming on. We really enjoyed it. It was great getting to know you.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in this week to the Weekly Juice Podcast. If you liked what you heard, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with friends. The more ratings we get, the more ears we'll get on our show, and in turn, we'll be able to provide you with more high-quality guests. You can also find us on Instagram at Weekly Juice Pod, where we post daily tips and tricks and document our own journey towards financial freedom. Make sure to tune in every Wednesday to get your weekly juice.